The theme for the talk with you this evening is the importance of the sense of the vast, of the immense. Familiar with the word vast? Just a little bit of background for a moment or two. I've had the privilege, if I may say, of giving retreats annually in Bodh Gaya, the place of the Buddha's awakening. It's been an annual journey there every January and February. And through the kind invitation of the Lord Abbot of the Thai Monastery, I had the chance to go, and it's been a very international group of people of us meeting together. Some of you in here will have been to India, and some of you will have been to Bodh Gaya. And in this explosion that's going on in India of privilege and prosperity for the few, it's had enormous impact on the village of the Buddha's awakening. The degree of pollution has increased enormously. Both of the air, sometimes many of us wear a face mask in the village. The illegal hotels have destroyed the irrigation system. There are weddings every night. So Radha, the teacher from Australia, gave the first 10-day retreat and myself second. So out of 20 days of a retreat, there was music from weddings every night for 19 days. And not far, these are rock festival style size loudspeakers, like 50 meters away, 100 meters away, just across the road. And the combination of all this pollution and noise and huge Mahayana festivals with 100,000 people at them and all that extra, etc. The reflection of one was, do we stay or do we go? And having been teaching there 38 years, it was a little bit of a decision to make. And I talked about it with the new abbot, and made the decision to go. And he offered us other temples elsewhere, Lumbini, where the Buddha was born, Shravasti, where he gave teachings after Saranath, Rajgir, and Kushinagar, where he died. And I just use it as a small example in life, because sometimes you and I, we have to come to a decision, we have to take responsibility for the decision, no one else can do it, and we have to say no to the past. And we've been through these dynamics of these situations, I'm sure, in our life. And when we say no, we have to move on, move away from, no returning back to, in the old form. Even after long years of connection, it does touch deep feelings of love, gratitude, appreciation, some sadness, some disappointment. And that feeling, those feelings I feel, are a natural outcome of entering into a situation and essentially saying to it, enough is enough. So the follow-on for us from this, and we have many connections in Bodh Gaya. I have to say, we have a school for the poor kids, supported by Dharma friends here in Israel and elsewhere, with 560 children. We have our NGO projects. We support village programs. There's a lot which we are engaged in, the Dharma network that we pass in our community. And so stepping away was from that as well. And sometimes in that, in the change, as I say, to me, the feeling element, the deep feeling element of some sadness, some regret, some feeling of the importance of moving on, those particular feelings can really be at work for us. And it takes, with no absolute guarantee, but it takes some trust. It's time to go, it's time to move on. And one wonders, I wonder, where does the trust come from there? So in our case, we had decided to, of the choices that we had, and the fifth choice was Namaste, India, never again. I didn't know to do that yet. So we decided to go to Shravasti. And for those of you who know some of the Buddha's talks, some of you will know from the middle-length discourses, in one of the books of the Buddha, there are 150 discourses, middle-length discourses, Majjhima Patipatta, 75 were given in Shravasti, where we're going to go. Yeah. But will anybody come? We'll see. It's a lot of unknown. People know Bodh Gaya, but Shravasti, who's heard of it? So, as I say, sometimes change, end, new beginning, with some uncertainty and doubt. And your life and my life, at times, we reach those points. And it isn't easy, in those times, to be steady in an important change in our life. There is something as well which is important in another way. In a break from the past, even overall memories, in this case Bodh Gaya, the relationship, or if it was work, or where we lived, all those things you and I can break from. Sometimes, in the break from the past, with the feelings that arise, it's liberating. It is liberating. So, though sometimes we might feel it's all bad news, it's very sad, or it shouldn't have happened, or whatever, if only Bodh Gaya was different. But it's not, it's what it is. And in that shift, the Buddha's Dharma is obviously and deeply interested in a liberating process. What is it that really frees us up there? And even in the freeing of us up, it may be difficult. There is sometimes an idea we have, our liberation, if liberation comes, it's going to be ecstasy forever after. It's going to be wonderful and pleasurable, and the experience of liberation is going to blow my mind. This is the language of those who've taken too many drugs, I would say. It's a little bit old, 1970s language. So sometimes the freeing of the being may carry with it some difficulty, some discomfort, some realization that we're leaving the old to explore the new. And that is part of that process. An interesting sitting across the way with the brothers and sisters. interesting because just across the path, the majority knew first time on retreat. Usually one's compassion is at one's highest for when they arrive. And many, of course, have no idea why they're here. And perhaps somebody else has persuaded them to go, their partner or their parents or their children or whatever. And some just heard on the gossip line, oh, go to Eindhoven. And then to find themselves in a rather crowded room watching their breath and walking painfully slowly up and down. And the problem is, back to the trust again, that when something is very new and very strange for us, reason, logic, thinking mind cannot make sense of it. Why? It's a good question. Anybody should ask, including yourself, why should I sit and be still? Why should I walk slowly up and down? And no matter what the framework of the thinking is, it can't explain it. It doesn't make sense. And it comes back to that lovely reminder of the Buddha. Ehi pasiko opanayiko pachatam. One must see through one's own experience. So we have the groups. And the groups will go from one to another. And people say, I can't focus in the moment. My mind's wandering. My body's here, but my mind's not here. My mind's here, but my body's not here. We all know this. It's not just the beginners. And then there's nothing which can be said, in this case from the teachers, that can make it clear and understandable. And I say this because sometimes when we can't make something clear to ourselves or to others, it's the act of trust. There's some trust. Maybe something will change in my experience which will help me to understand, because the understanding is coming from inside of me. I'm seeing through my own experience. Aha! Perhaps when I sit still, I'm closer to myself. Perhaps when I walk more slowly, I feel what it is to be a human being on this earth, just experiencing the elements of life, and I feel closer not only to myself, but to the nature. But our own experience and a certain trust has to allow that to come through. And it's very much a practice of trust and having sometimes the determination in our life, as I said, to look at a situation and is a change necessary? And for sometimes, is a major change necessary? And where is the energy and the commitment going to come from? And when important change is necessary, and you and I make that change, where it comes from is the deep. That's where it comes from. Important, valuable change in our life comes from the deep. The shallow mind cannot make changes. The superficial mind can only think about the changes I would like to make. Deep will make the changes. That's why we meditate, to have more access to the deep. I was reading a rather lovely report from an Australian nurse who was working with the dying. And she asked them a question over some years, I think it was 12 years maybe she worked with. Are there any regrets? You understand the word regret? Anything you're sorry about? Are there any regrets that you have in your life? And then she made a short, so she asked many people over the years, people who were close to death. And at the top of the list was, did you remember this? I wish I did not work so hard. The number one regret, I wish I did not work so hard. Well, it can be that in the hardness of working, and some people work extremely hard, may be an obsession, it may be a need, it may be denial. We work so hard to avoid intimacy, to avoid closeness, to avoid love. So if people speak of us, sometimes they speak Christopher, it's a pity, but they do. Oh, he or she, or they work so hard. He or she is so busy. He or she is so full with his or her career. Please do not regard it as a compliment. Please do not be proud of working hard. Ask ourselves, if I am working hard, am I missing out somewhere else? What might I be missing out on?
And I have one lovely example. I may have mentioned it because I recognize some of you here from last year. It made me smile when she told me, but she was deadly serious. She said her good husband worked extremely hard. And when he came home from work, he went straight to the computer in his little office in their home and was back on there. And she said it was the equivalent of having another woman in the house. And she said that with his giving so much attention to work there, she said to him, something has to change in our relationship, and this is what it is. Either it's our relationship or your relationship with the computer. The two cannot go on like this. The compelling need and all the reason to keep working hard. In the end, she said, I am divorcing you because, and she did, because you prefer to have your hands on the computer than on me. Sharp response. And she's out. So sometimes, too much in one direction, I'm using work here as an example, could be neglect and forgetfulness, and as the Buddha constantly said, ignoring in other directions. Dharma is concerned about the fullness of life, the richness of it, the diversity of it. Why? Because life is rich. Why? Because life is multifaced. Why? Because life is diverse. And somehow we want to sense that. And then in our meditation, Nice water. Better than English water. In our meditations, we often use, it's valuable and helpful language, and it's the language of seeing. And Jalsimi uses the word sometimes, and I use the word. This is to see more clearly. Practice is about observing. It's a very big buzzword of the present time. It's about mindfulness, which is having a huge impact. So the practice of seeing clearly, of observing there. And if we don't see the not seeing, if we don't see, trouble will come. Like night follows day, it will come. So practice, exploration, is definitely about seeing, about being present, really giving care and attention to. And then sometimes we hit the difficult spot. It can happen any time. It can be happening listening to this talk. It can be happening outside, of course, any moment, any time. Something difficult. So what was unconscious, or as they say, unconscious is a fancy word for the unspoken. So something occurs and it moves and it comes, arises, emotion, a story, an impression, and thoughts and ideas and views, opinions, and there's a whole there. In a way, it comes from the deep. Doesn't feel like it, but it does. And when it comes, when it's difficult, the first wish in the mind is usually to get rid of it as quickly as possible. It's unwelcome, unwanted, and one might even start praying to the non-existent God that it will go quickly as possible. Now, it isn't easy because of the desire, the wanting to get rid of. This wanting to get rid of, all too human, puts pressure on it. The wanting to get rid of is the same as saying, I'm going to put this fire out by pouring petrol on it. It's not easy in the problematic condition to see, is there another way to look at without placing the pressure upon? In the Dharma teachings, the Buddha uses this word, which Christopher forgets, but he uses the word. It will come. And it's, what is it that we didn't see, which was building up, and then exploded on us? It doesn't come from nothing. It didn't come out of the blue. It wasn't sent by God down to us for not being very good. It arose, and there is not the Dharma in our life, but the drama. And the drama emerges. And we're learning to sit and walk and be with it. Can we track, this is the Buddha's word, I don't know what the Pali, I forget, track, what is it that I didn't see that led to this? And those of you who know the word mindfulness in Pali, sati, S-A-T-I, mindfulness, it means, yes, to be mindful, but it also and equally means to remember. When there is some issue which is happening in our life, yes, it is important to be mindful of, to see it, to see clearly, this is what's going on, to name it, anger, confusion, anxiety, or whatever, and also see it, to name it, and to know, what is it that I didn't see beforehand? What was I ignoring, not seeing? And it's quite a task and a responsibility for us to keep so close in touch with life that we are really looking for the signals. Sometimes we're in communication with others, for example, and or with regard to what we are doing. And there is the intention, it's so vitally important. And we bring the intention into an action. We speak, we work, we create, we go towards. And life has this extraordinary movement with it. One of the problem aspect,
problematic aspects of this is the deception, our human foolishness, our not seeing, is somehow to imagine if I engage with an intention and I respond, I do something, that somehow, because the intention is good, no wish to cause harm, not wanting to cause anybody pain, no wish to abuse or exploit, intention is good, whatever it may be about, and we've made space in our life for that fresh direction, the delusion is, therefore, the result should be good. The intention's good, the action is good, so the outcome should be. You'll be lucky. This is wishful thinking. There is no assurance. No assurance whatsoever. Sometimes we say, use the word squirm. What squirm means? Squirm. When I hear the word choice, it's one of those words of squirm. Because we're constantly being told we all have a choice. Everybody has a choice. And you can choose to do this and choose to do that. And it makes me, personally, as a human being, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Because we can choose, so we think, but it may not have any relationship to result. I don't know what the situation like is here in Israel, though I have to say, with the events here in Tel Aviv last summer, wow, was my heart warm. At last, they're on the streets where they should be. It was very nice. And in the economic crisis that's going on in Europe, nearly 25% of people under 25 in UK are unemployed. It's 50% in Spain. It's a nightmare. My darling daughter went for a job. All chose to go for the job. And rather important work in social work. All wished to secure the job. Like saying this as a slightly proud parent, forgive me. 219 applied for the job. And my daughter, whatever, got the job. That is about what. 218 didn't get the job. There was the choice, and a good choice, a wholesome choice, wanting to help people, I call living in the underworld, and the nightmare events that goes on in suburbia. But the choice and the result didn't meet, 1 out of 200. I use it as a small example of how important it is for us that in the movement of the life towards results, big ones and small ones, what has happened to us that we experience disappointment, upset, regret, failure, sometimes beating ourselves up emotionally. In the movement of the intention and the action and the result, what is it about the result and about ourself that sometimes the result, we end up giving ourselves an incredibly hard time, even though the intention was positive and good, about anything in life? Could it be that in English it's called a rhetorical question, meaning the question kind of conveys the answer. Could it be
there is a not seeing at work. So I think, oh, I choose to do this. I want to go after this job. I want to develop this relationship with this woman or man. I want to start this creativity. I want to break away from the old and start a new life. Whatever it might be, big or small. Could it be that the blind spot is the vision of life is too damn small? It's a rhetorical question. Which, yes, is the answer. Could it be that the self, the sense of I, the me, who is the doer, is limited, defined, and restricted to the movement and especially the outcome? And therefore, consciousness, that means for you and I to be conscious human beings, has to go make the shift, especially with important activities of our life, from a small, little, pathetic, little doer, with all the importance that we give to it, to a much bigger vision. And the vision, in Dharma language, will be the sense of something immense. People who suffer through results, sadly, are living. You see, like those horses in horse racing, the blinkers. They can't see either side, you see. And sometimes our life is like that. We've invested, through not seeing, so much into what we do and into the outcome. We can't see what else makes it happen. And for any event in life to happen, anything, you know how much it requires? It requires the cooperation of the entire universe. Everything cooperates to make one thing happen. And we, stupid human beings, think, no, it's about me and what I want. Oh, no, it's not. Never was. No chance. So even when we initiate, hopefully, the beautiful, and the creative, and the precious, and the compassionate, and the loving, when you and I are bringing the best out of our being and we're finding ways to share that, to share the deep there, it still requires from us a sense of the vast, of the immensity of life. And if you and I have the sense of the immensity, all things that help make something happen, if we have an appreciation for that, the worry, the anxiety, and the fears, and the hurt about results will finish. Said earlier, yes, some disappointment. Yes, some feeling of sadness. Yes, some regret. But small, small time. Why? Because one has a sense of the wide variety of causes and conditions which bring and are involved with every result. And our ability to appreciate that and to see that is what an awakened or liberated life is all about. Sometimes, just a bit more. One of them, for those who love the Dharma and love the silence and and the stillness of things. Quite often, there is more depth than sometimes than actually what we realize. And when there is more sense of depth, which may show itself as calmness, love, and the Buddha uses this lovely term. It's vihara. And in the Buddhist world, Simi being, and I will know being ex-nun and ex-monk, as I say, post-monastics. Sounds fancy, doesn't it? Post-monastics. So the vihara is the monastery. But its literal meaning is a place worth staying in for some time. That's the outer meaning of vihara. And you have Brahma vihara there. So in Dharma language, sometimes quite naturally or with our depth of our meditation, sometimes we touch the deep place inside, which is always precious. It can show itself in many, many ways. And one of the ways that it can show itself is that place of abiding with love, the place of abiding with compassion, the place of abiding with joy, with gratitude. And there's much in the way of depth to abide. And when those times of abiding in that, we just feel that deep inside, meditation method and technique, in those moments and times, have served their purpose. Let's just feel the deep there. It's quite natural and human for the meditators, for the yogis, that in such experience, or it may just be the deep may show itself in calm, in concentration, in stillness, in feeling steadfast and at home with the present. Many ways to feel the deep. And naturally, quite often, the thought, and it's an important thought and reflection, yes, but when I leave here to go, when this experience goes, then I start to lose this feeling of the deep. Then I start looking around for another retreat with Simi or somebody, or whatever it might be. This duality, this dialogue, this concern, is probably the most frequent concern that I hear. And we poor teachers, at the end of our retreats, will give 15 or 20 minutes of talking about daily life and liberation. But the issue, not easy, has to be understood in some other way. I would say it is not possible, at least I haven't met anybody yet, including myself, and I have to meet myself every day, that it's not possible to keep the idea based on the feeling of what is deep. One can't. And the Buddha uses this word, nimitta. And it's not easy to follow, but hang in, don't go away, I'll do my best. There is the experience, sometimes, of feeling settled, calm, relaxed, content. The deep will show itself when the inner voice says, I really don't want to be anywhere else. So there's some quality there, I really just want to be here, in this case, here on the retreat, here in this situation. Just want to be. I don't want to be. I don't need to be, and I don't want to be anywhere else. That's already the voice from within of the deep. And easily happens that the sensation, it's a sensation, a lovely one, of the deep feels very nourishing and fulfilling. It's lovely to feel deep. We don't want to be lightweight, shallow, superficial, hopeless human beings. We want to feel the deep. But in feeling it, terribly easy, the view of the deep is associated with a sensation, with a particular quality of feeling in here. And this then is described as the deep. It is deep. But I keep saying it's one expression of it. So when we leave and we don't have that deep feeling there, then the thought arises, oh, my practice isn't very deep. Oh, God, more reason to beat ourselves up. I'm not practicing hard enough. Or society and the pressures from family and friends and work and money is too much, and I can't get to the deep because of all these expectations on me and on myself. Oh, gosh, and when's the next retreat with Toga? And that conflict and turmoil is a constant voice in the community, in the network, amongst the dedicated practitioners there. Somehow, you have to find a way of looking at it differently. Coming back to the word. The Buddha and Sariputta too said, what happens is, we take something from a situation and we wish to repeat it. This is the nimitta, it's a sign. We take something from it and we wish to have it again. Or we take something from it, in this case it's called the memory. It's called, wow, what I felt like, in that I felt in that one-to-one, or one after listening to a talk, or whatever it might be. And we take that, and we take that as the signal, the nimitta, the sign, the mark of something deep. Such a deep experience, it touched me. And we take that, the mind holds it, and then wants to, dare I say, give it rebirth somewhere else. I want to take that and put it there. Oh, nightmare. We do the same in other areas of life as well. With desire means problematic wanting. It always requires, whether we are aware of it for a desire which has, in which there is a problem in it, it will require memory. We may not realize that we've had a sensation in the past and there is a need to repeat the sensation. The alcoholic, the junkie, the person with food problems and making money problems and consumer problems and shopping problems, all those things. It's the old sensation grabbed hold of, in a way robbing one of choice, and that moment of taking hold of is taking something from it called the sign or the signal. For any anger to arise, there has to be a nimitta. So something happens, the memory comes, we take something and we carry it, and we either get angry with ourselves, or we get angry with somebody else, or both. The same with fear. Where there is the carrying from the past, in this case called the deep,
and the idea of it to the present, there's going to be a problem.
Big time.
So could it be that the deep is not actually about a sensation, valuable and beautiful as it is? I am a meditation teacher, so I had to say that quickly. It's not only about the deep experience, which is precious and beautiful, but also it's about trust. It's about trust.
A bigger trust than in myself, but it's about trust that the benefit will come. And what is really deep, the really deep, is not holding to anything. That's the deep. It's not the sensation. That is deep, but it's not the deepest. It's not holding to anything.
And so sometimes
it can be here in the meditation room, between the here and the and outside, or here and daily life. Some people will say,
here, oh, Christopher,
when I'm sitting, I can go much deeper. You know, if I had a shekel for every time I heard this, in a helicopter.
Oh, Christopher, when I'm sitting, I can go much deeper.
This very view makes the separation.
Oh, Christopher, how can I go from my deep sitting meditation and take it into my walking?
You can't.
Sitting is sitting, walking is walking. They're two different events.
And some people, it's the other way around. Christopher, when I'm walking, I can feel so calm, so clear. My body is not screaming at me. I can really feel presence and some concentration and some real depth. But as soon as I go into sit, I have to be still. My mind is all over the place. I'm wandering, I'm fantasizing, I'm daydreaming. How can I go from the walking to the sitting?
Except
the idea, to repeat myself, of carrying something from one place to another is the problem. It's the problem. And therefore, the real death is a life without the carrying. And when we're not carrying, life can move freely. So to repeat a little bit, in the daily life sometimes, say to ourselves, got so much to do, and it's really taking me away from my practice. So many responsibilities and so many tasks.
If I say that to myself half a dozen times, I start feeling tired. And I haven't even done anything. I've got so much to do. The very thought is exhausting. So we start off exhausted. Then we wonder why we've got no energy to do anything, because we've exhausted all our energy in a few sentences. I've got so much to do, etc.
And if there is carrying from the sitting to the walking, from the deep to whatever, if there is carrying, we won't be able to see clearly that everything shows itself as an expression of the deep. Even our silly mind, also an expression of something deep. As we get a little more with more depth in life, as we get a greater sense of freedom in life, a sense of the expanse in life, the divisions get less. The life on the meditation cushion and the life sitting in the chair of the car and a life sitting in a chair in the office or in the armchair, if with real interest, the difference is there, but it's very small. And our practice, to summarize, is, yes, to take an interest in the deed, of course, to take equal interest in activity, that sense of the vast, how many factors, contingencies, conditions involving the whole universe help to make something happen. And if we have a sense of that vast, our life falls into a proper balance. If we don't, it will be relying on the view of the self. It will rely upon the doer, which is neurotic, about what is done. Oh, do not, whatever happens in life, do not rely on the doer to have a view about what's been done. Whoa. No peace of mind. It's a torment of the doer and what's been done. Therefore, I say, keep the consciousness open. Keep it expanded. Have the sense of all the things that make something happen. And then we can engage freely with life, not dependent on the doer. May all beings live with awareness. May all beings know and explore the deep. Beings have a real sense in daily life of the vast, of the immense.